Have you been to the High Line yet? It's one of Manhattan's newest parks, and in the summer, it's full of sunbathers, lush plantings, and strolling locals. It's also about 30 feet above the ground, built on the bed of an old elevated train line. Since the first section opened a little over 5 years ago, the High Line has been widely praised for its innovative reuse of old industrial infrastructure. Writer Anique Lafarge lives close to the park, and she's written a guidebook to the High Line and its history. Producer Sarah Nix talked with her this spring and asked her how often she visits.
I was actually on the High Line yesterday afternoon, and it's a really interesting time to be on the High Line right now because the annual spring cutback recently happened. The High Line, unlike most gardens, is not cut back in the fall. So after the cutback, at around this time of year, before the plants start to fill out again, what you really see on the High Line is the railroad infrastructure that Friends of the High Line and its design team saved when they built the park.
So what does that original infrastructure look like?
Well, to kind of understand the High Line today, you have to go back kind of a long time, about almost 100 years ago. Railroads were the main transportation source for goods and produce into the city. And the West Side was a very heavily industrial area, and it ran right next to the Hudson River. And so you had all the ships coming in, and there was this real marriage of river and rail. And so the High Line, when it was built, it was a very unique, modern form of transportation that allowed the trains to run past factories and warehouses, and trains could just pull off, veer off from the track onto a little spur and deliver their goods and then just keep on going.
And it's some 30 feet off the street level, right?
Yeah, and it's usually, most parts of the High Line are about 30 feet wide, but there are some areas that are a little bit wider.
The last train that rolled down those rails was in 1980, I think.
Yes, correct.
But someone mentioned to me recently that, of course, the spur was built, the elevated rail was built to last for centuries. So what happened to it when it stopped being used for trains?
Well, the last train, as you mentioned, ran in 1980. As soon as the train stopped running on the High Line, the viaduct kind of fell into a quiet state of nature, and a wild garden grew up, all kinds of plants. There were, when somebody did a survey in early 2000s of the flora on the High Line, they found 160 different species. So many different plants came to the High Line because they would hitchhike like a little seed hobo. They'd hitchhike a ride on a railroad train that came, say, from the heartland. So you had all these grasses from the prairies of Nebraska. They would come in all manner of ways from all over the country. And so this really beautiful wild garden grew up there. And the High Line was abandoned. It was defunct. It was illegal to trespass on it, but a lot of people did. And it began to be torn down. The southern part of the High Line was torn down in the 1990s. But the rest of the viaduct stood, and a lot of people wanted to tear it down. So there was a big debate in the neighborhood. And in 1999, two men, Robert Hammond and Joshua David, met at a community board meeting, and they decided that they wanted to preserve it.
You write that it took a decade to realize that project. What were some of the challenges to it?
Well, there were a lot of stakeholders that they had to negotiate with. There was the very considerable cadre of owners of property who own the real estate underneath the High Line.
Oh, they were probably hoping to cash in.
Yeah, they were. They wanted to develop. There's a lot of development going on, obviously, all over New York City, and they wanted to develop their land underneath the High Line.
So eventually, the project was approved, and a team of landscape architects and plant specialists won the design competition. What was their plan to transform the old rail line?
So the team that won, James Corner Field Operations, Dillard Scofidio and Renfro, with Pete Outolf doing the plant design, what they set about doing was coming up with a plan to transform the High Line into this series of episodic events that would preserve a lot of the history of the park. And one of the major things in the story was when Robert Hammond, one of the co-founders of Friends of the High Line, brought Joel Sternfeld, who is one of the great landscape photographers, up there and asked him to take pictures for a marketing brochure.
And this was before they had done any work, right? This was when it was still in this kind of disrepair, wild state.
That was in 2000. And he went up there and he was really gobsmacked by what he saw. And he shot for a whole year. And those photographs really turned out to be, they set the tone for everything that came afterwards. because they so defined this really beautiful, wild landscape in an urban setting. And so when the design team set about their planning and their laying out their design ideas for the park, that was very much at the center of their thinking, was to preserve the horticultural aspect of that. They tried to use a lot of the same kinds of plants that had grown on the High Line. Actually, when they built the park, they had to pull everything out for asbestos remediation and other industrial kind of pollutants that had over the years, because it was an industrial site, had contaminated the rail bed. But they put a lot of it back. And what it looks like now is it's a meandering path that runs for about a mile and a half. And it was designed to be a very episodic landscape. You start in a woodland in the southern part of the park. You approach a bog at around 14th Street. There's a grassland called the Chelsea Grassland between 16th Street and 20th Street. And then you walk through this wonderful little area. It's like a little secret magical garden. It's called the Chelsea Thicket, that is filled with very tall trees and really erases the city for about a block and a half or so.
So is there one point along that mile and a half stretch of the High Line that to you kind of sums up the thinking that went into how they were going to develop the project?
Yeah. The grasslands is a really good example, the Chelsea grasslands. When you walk through, particularly this time of year after the plants have been cut back, and you can really see the tracks, you can actually see stamped into the rails Bethlehem Steel or Erie Lackawanna. The paving system was designed so that the gardens, the plants, would just come up through. They're like fingers that kind of disappear into the plantings. And so as you're walking along, you feel the garden growing up organically around you. And there's all these really wonderful juxtapositions of hard and soft. You have the hard pavement, the steel rails, but all these very beautiful soft plants, lots of different colors. So you really have you're walking through a very varied landscape in the middle of a city. I mean, the really extraordinary thing, the astounding thing of walking through the High Line is that there you are 30 feet above the city street, walking between buildings, seeing this view, this unobstructed view, with no fear of getting hit by a crazy taxi driver.
And there's even this moment, I'm not quite sure where it is, where there's an amphitheater that's built kind of at an intersection, and there's a cinematic view in front of you of the city. It's a streetscape, essentially.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's like an only in New York moment where, I mean, who would build a giant window so that people could sit and look at traffic, except in New York City? So there you sit. And these stadium seats, and you look, and people do, and it's always crowded. Lovers sit and hold hands and look out the window and gaze at traffic. It's unlike any other place I've ever seen before.
The High Line has been celebrated as one of the great urban projects of the last decade. You know, it's part public art, it's part urban planning. Do you think people who are maybe dubious about the project have changed their minds about it now that they've seen it in action?
Well, there are people who regret the transformation of the neighborhood that the High Line is in. Of course, the neighborhood was changing before the High Line was built and opened. It was already starting to become, for instance, a magnet for art galleries. And so the neighborhood was very vibrant before the High Line came, but it has all this construction going on. There's an enormous amount of gentrification. And, you know, when Robert and Josh first started thinking about the High Line, they were thinking that it would be mostly an asset used by the community. I mean, they thought that 300,000 people maximum would come a year. They get 4 million now. So they never expected that it would be this successful. But I think that, you know, it's become a real model for adaptive reuse of former industrial infrastructure all over this country and all over the world. So there are projects in cities everywhere that are inspired by the High Line.
Such as what?
Well, there's a project in Chicago. It's called the 606, and it's also a former elevated rail line. I think it's about 3 miles, and it's under construction now. I mean, there's a great project in Atlanta. It's not elevated. It's called the Beltline, but it was also made from an old railroad. Basically, it was a ring around the city of Atlanta, 22 miles. What's interesting about that project is that it connects as many as 45 different neighborhoods. In Philadelphia, there is a project that's getting a lot of traction called the Reading Viaduct. That project is interesting because there's also a long section that runs at grade and below grade, even through a tunnel. So that will be a very different kind of project.
That's Anique Lafarge talking about New York's Aerial Greenway. Her guidebook is called On the High Line.